So welcome or welcome back to another new episode here at Care Alive. My name is Kenzie Rock, and today we will be discussing an amazing book. We'll be talking about The Divine Comedy by Dante Alighieri, and today's episode will be focused on the summary of the whole poem, including some overviews about what's written in the poem. So stay tuned, and before we begin, remember that links to my socials will be down below. And right now we are currently on Podchaser, where you can go on ahead, leave a review, and also comment about the podcast. So let's begin today's episode. So many movies today and series have been using a very descriptive saying that abandon all hope, ye that enter here. And this is actually a line from The Divine Comedy, which is found in chapter 3, line 9. And The Divine Comedy is an exceptionally imaginative poem of immense scale and emotional power. It's what one would describe as an adventure story, one with a metaphysical epic of mind and spirit that takes the reader through the monstrous depths of hell, onto purgatory, and out into the great manifest of heaven. It was written in the 13th century by Dante Alighieri, who is widely known as Dante, who was born around May 21st and June 20th of year 1265 in Florence, Italy. He married when he was about 20 years old, but the real love of his life was a different woman named Beatrice, a woman Dante claimed he had only met twice since they were nine, but he was deeply in love with her. Even after her death, he was still in love with her. The exact nature of Dante's love for Beatrice is unclear, though she is one of the major pillars to the plot of Inferno, which is the first part of the trilogy. She is the one who sends Virgo to serve as Dante's guide through hell and purgatory, which is Inferno and Purgatorio, as known in the book. And being a pagan soul, Virgil was not allowed to enter paradise or paradiso, and passed Dante off to Beatrice at the end of Purgatorio. So Dante's prominence in the politically divided city of Florence, Italy, led to his exile, and all that he owned was seized, leading to bitter sentiments towards his city and all those within it. All this can be seen and is written in The Divine Comedy, from part 1, which is Inferno, part 2, which is Purgatorio, and part 3, which is known as Paradiso. And it's a big trilogy, so it can take some time to read. But he began to write all this upon his exile, so it took him 10 years to come up with all this, but in the end it was all worth it. He wrote it in Italian instead of Latin, which was custom, and this decision of his to write it in Italian made his work available to a wider audience, not only for the elite and the learned, but also to the common people of Florence, Italy. He sadly passed away on September 13th or 14th in year 1321. And all of these life experiences feature prominently through the chapters of the first part of the poem, Inferno, which is crucial to understanding the magnificent poem. Inferno is made up of the divided Florentine politics, classical philosophy and mythology, and the teachings of the Catholic Church, as it's known then and today. Because of his exile, Dante composed the Inferno in a way that not only exposed political and church systems and areas of corruption, but also to grind axes with the powers that were in Florence. Inferno also contains Catholic Church teachings like the beginning and the the revelation in the end, how the world's supposed to end, and Dante's inclusion of characters and references from works written by Greek and Roman philosophers like Virgil himself and Aristotle and famous poets, Inferno is made relatable to most people and accessible to readers across time. So no matter what sort of reader you are you a reader who enjoys modern fiction, or are you a reader who enjoys mythology from the Greeks or Romans or the Egyptians, this book, Divine Comedy, is a book for you, and especially its first part of the trilogy, Inferno, will be something that will be relatable to any sort of reader. So one must also understand the cantos or the sections of a long poem and the terza rima form, which Dante invented, specified for his work itself. So let's get into the plot. It's a big book, okay? It's 456 pages. I've read it myself. I've read the translation by Henry. And once you read it the first time, you might think that Dante was tormented. I personally think that Dante was tormented. And all the emotions that he felt. He felt pain. He felt anger. He felt resentment. And all this, he still felt love for someone who had died. But all these emotions powered him to write these three stages of this book. So we will first start with Inferno, which is the first part. And the introduction of Inferno presents the narrator and central character Dante Alighieri, lost both in life and quite literally in the woods. So picture Little Red Riding Hood at the edge of the forest. So she's lost in life. She's lost in the woods, but this is Dante without the hood and without the big bad wolf and without the basket going to grandma's. He is actually heading towards hell, and the big bad wolf in the story is actually Virgil, who's good, and he's leading Dante through hell and purgatory. And during the rising action, Virgil, the Roman poet, the actual Roman poet, is in the book and arrives as Dante's guide, who was sent by Beatrice. Together, the two main characters journey through the circles of hell. And according to Dante, the circles of hell were in 9 stages. So these were limbo, lust, gluttony, greed, anger, heresy, violence, fraud, and treachery. So these were the 9 circles, according to Dante, the 9 circles of hell. So sinners are punished in different sections of the 9 circles, and the poets observe their behavior and punishments and sometimes speak with them, learning of their sins, crimes, and misgivings. A number of figures in hell are Florentines or mythical features like Greek and Roman mythology creatures, and they are repurposed for Dante's story. So however you know a specific mythical creature, let's say vampires, werewolves, or Hercules and Zeus, Dante managed to twist it so that they can fit into his story. And this is actually something very fascinating, because not so many authors do this. That's why this book is one of the greatest works of art he has ever done. And as the poets descend into hell, circles of hell grow smaller with each punishment, growing more brutal and vicious than the last, as the distance from God grows wider and the distance from Lucifer himself grows narrower. So hell's final circles aren't all that of fire and brimstone, but instead are frozen, icy landscapes. This is actually something I personally did not understand, why he perceived as hell being frozen at some point, but to him, the first half was all fire, brimstones, misery, and then the final stages of the circles were actually frozen, icy landscapes. And in the climax, Dante and Virgil reach Lucifer, the damned king of hell himself, who is portrayed in the trilogy as a giant whose torso protrudes from the ice, with 3 heads chewing 3 particular traitors. We have Caius, Brutus, and Judas Iscariot. I don't know why he chose these three, but he had a reason. So the poet must then climb down Saturn's huge body to escape hell. And during the falling action, Virgil explains to Dante that hell was formed when Saturn fell from heaven, which is something we all know, which created a vast pit that reached the center of the earth. This is something common. We know that growing up, you've always been told that hell is right in the middle of the earth's crust, though geography has taught me that the middle of the earth's crust is actually molten lava. So I don't know which the poets are now emerging from. And in the resolution, Dante emerges from hell and sees the stars overhead. This establishes continuity, leading the way for the next part of Dante's Divine Comedy trilogy, which is Purgatorio. So, Dante's hell is a vast, sprawling place. Some parts are terrifying and painful, some are just tragic, while others are just downright hilarious. All this forms an epic journey. All this, it's just for an epic journey that is literature, influential poetry, a study of class, power, and morality. History, mythology, Dante's Inferno truly has something for everyone. And like I said, you all have to read it. You don't have to read the rest of the part if you don't want to. I'll leave an audiobook right after this episode. I'll leave you an audiobook, a full audiobook of the whole trilogy. So you'll just spare yourself 13 hours. You can download it and listen it for yourself. So recap of the whole plot of Inferno. Dante is exiled. His exile causes him to write Inferno. What powers Inferno? The disgust he feels for his church, the sentiment he feels for his city and all the people within it, and the pain of losing the one he loves. So he takes you through a journey from earth, through hell, through the nine circles of hell, and out of it again. So that's basically, in a rough patch, what Inferno is all about. Before I dive into the plot of Purgatorio, let us go to a very quick break and listen to this sponsored ad. Okay, now we dive into the second part of the trilogy, which is Purgatorio. And the introduction of Purgatorio, they are now out of hell, both Virgil and Dante, and stand at the base of a mountain which was created when Lucifer crashed onto earth. So this mountain is also the ascension to heaven. So it begins with another lobby of sorts called the Ante-Purgatory, which are people waiting to ascend, usually in the lobby because they were excommunicated or they repented too late in life. Dante made a point to include that the prayers of the living could affect how long a soul lingered in purgatory. So if someone repented too late in life, they must wait for a lengthy period before ascending to heaven with the others. So there are seven terraces, according to Dante, each one loosely tied to the seven deadly sins. Instead of being punished and tortured like in Inferno, as you ascend the terraces, you alone are accountable for the sins from the past. So it's like an intervention. So in Inferno, you are tortured brutally, but in Purgatory, you're given an intervention for your sins. You're given a chance to reflect what you did wrong, and you're given an opportunity to correct it. And the first terrace was the terrace of pride, which was like the beginning, was the terrace of pride, where the souls there are humbled and humiliated by having to carry massive boulders on their backs and forever being hunched over. The second terrace is the terrace of envy, where people are punished for wanting what is someone else's, and some are blinded by their eyes being sewn shut so they cannot see what is not supposed to be theirs. And the wrathful are being punished in the third terrace, where the thick black smoke surrounds them and makes them feel alone, which is something I don't want to see. I actually cannot imagine how bad that will be. And some even see visions in the darkness, like meekness, which is practically the opposite of wrath. And in the fourth terrace, we have those that were slothful or slow in life, and here they trace and shout about people that showed zeal in life. This might sound funny, and it is. Can you just imagine that you are in an intervention, and because you were so slothful, you're asked to shout. Let's say, let me use myself for example. It's Phyllis. You're in an intervention, and you're asked. You run and shout names of people who have had zeal in life. So you're just running and shouting, Usain Bolt, and then you're running and shouting, Barack Obama. You see how funny that sounds? So I don't know how that worked for Dante, but according to him, in the fourth terrace, the slothful did exactly that. They ran, they had a race, and they had to shout about people who showed zeal in life. And in the fifth terrace, the poet encounters the greedy and the reckless spenders, who are penitent here by being bound face down, unable to move or gather anything. And they must show an understanding of love beyond physical goods and money, so they shout out examples of generosity. And before the sixth terrace, there is an earthquake for Dante and Virgil, which is a sign that another soul has repented and is now able to enter paradise. So they hear an earthquake, meaning there's somebody who has repented. Let's say they're in the first terrace in pride, and now they've repented for their sins. Now they're going to heaven. And once this is done, the two now enter the terrace of gluttony, which is the sixth terrace, where those that feasted non-stop in life are forced to starve and thirst. Almost to the peak, they enter terrace 7, where the lustful walk through flames, where they must show disregard for their bodies completely, shouting stories of chastity. To leave this terrace, Dante must walk through a wall of flame, which he does so only because the woman he loves, Beatrice, awaits for him in paradise. So, recap of the scene of Purgatorio, which is the second part. They're out of hell, Virgil and Dante. And this is the last time, actually, once you read, you'll notice that this is the last time you'll see Virgil. And if you remember, I said Virgil cannot cross Purgatorio because he was a pagan, so he doesn't believe in heaven at all. So Purgatorio is his last point. And in Purgatorio, you see that Dante comes by the mountain, which has 7 terraces: the terrace of pride, the terrace of envy, the terrace of the wrathful, the terrace of the slothful, the terrace of the greedy and reckless spenders, the terrace of the gluttons, and last but not least, the terrace of the lustful. And you see that he goes through all this learning and seeing what these people are doing. And he himself at the end has to walk through a wall of flame, which allows him to enter paradise. And he only does this because the one woman he loves, Beatrice, awaits for him in paradise. Now another quick break before we enter into the last part of the trilogy, which is Paradiso. Okay, that was a nice water break. Now we are in the last part of the trilogy, which is Paradiso. We began with Inferno, we finished that, we walked into Purgatorio, and now we are in Paradiso. And if you can remember, Dante has now crossed over into Paradiso. He has left Virgil behind because Virgil was a pagan during his life and during when he died, so he doesn't believe in heaven. So that's his last point. And Dante meets Beatrice, and they are going to ascend through the spheres of heaven, floating higher and higher towards paradise. Virgil, his guide until now, as you well know, does not follow. And the first sphere, according to Dante, is the sphere of the moon, which is for the souls that have been unable to keep their vows, usually when it comes to the vow between them and God. So we see a lot of authority figures and religious figures that were kicked out of their positions, not of their own fault. The sphere of Mercury is the second, which is for those that were right and just, but were driven by ambition, so not entirely selfless. Let's say those that were driven with fame. You do something, but fame overtakes you, and you forget what you did the purpose for. Or those people that, let's say somebody who holds charity events for goodwill, but in the end, they're doing that because they love the money they receive and the fame they receive. So according to him, they fall on the sphere of Mercury. The third sphere is the sphere of Venus, which is for quote-unquote lovers, people that loved God and humanity so passionately that that alone earned them a place in heaven. The fourth sphere is the sphere of the sun, which is for the wise and intellectual who sought out to educate and change hearts and minds. So Dante has some discussions with a few of these wise leaders. I personally would too, because I'm pretty sure Dante himself had questions for these people. And since they are on their way to heaven, they don't seem like bad people, do they now? And the fifth sphere is the sphere of Mars, the warriors. Their souls hold up the shape of a cross. So like, picture the cross itself, and then picture like people with wings clinging on the sides from the foot to the headrest to the armrest. So it's just lined on the edges with people. And these souls have fought and given their lives for faith, including many heroes from the Crusades. And the sixth sphere is the sphere of Jupiter, which is for the souls of the just rulers, make up the shape of an eagle. So they're just in the sky, and then they make this shape of an eagle, telling Dante about the importance of divine justice. The seventh sphere is the sphere of Satan, those who lived their lives in prayer and contemplation. These souls are actually very, very angry, angry at all current state of the church and corruption inside it. Dante used this section to express his discontent with the church of their time. And the eighth sphere is called the fixed stars, which exists in the constellation of Gemini, as this is almost his final destination. So he's able to look back and see Earth in the distance. So he's in space? I don't know. I think he's in space myself. And Dante meets the greatest saints to exist here, including the Virgin Mary and the Apostles. And the last sphere is called the Primum Mobile, and it's last physical stop on his adventure. And we see nine orders of angels surrounding God, all appearing as bright lights and energy. Beatrice recounts the story of creation here, how God put everything into existence. And we enter the last realm beyond physical existence, which is the Empyrean. And Dante sees the shape of a rose, but it represents all divine love and heaven as he just experienced exists inside this flower that he sees. Dante also sees God himself and describes it as best as he could in the book, and as three overlapping circles to represent the Holy Trinity. The poem comes to an end as Dante gives up on trying to describe it, not having the words or the thoughts to understand what he saw there. He says, quote unquote, "That was not a flight for my wings." The end. So we've conquered the whole book in a matter of almost half an hour. And recap of the whole Paradiso. It's now Dante and his love Beatrice. They are now in paradise. They walk through the spheres of heaven, which I wasn't sure this was something that could happen. So we have the first sphere, which is the sphere of the moon, the sphere of Mercury, the sphere of Venus, the sphere of the sun, the sphere of Mars, the sphere of Jupiter, the sphere of Saturn, the fixed stars, and the primum mobile. And though the primum is like the last physical stop, and now we enter the divine entity, which is the Empyrean, where God is present in the middle of the rose. So I'm pretty sure right now you're wondering, was Dante crazy? No, this was a man tortured by his emotions that were forced onto him by his own church, his own city, his own people, his own family. And all this pain, all this torture is too much for one soul. So during exile, you have got nothing to do. What would you have done yourself if you were in Dante's shoes? Just picture that. The woman you love since you were 9 is not your wife. You have been forced to marry a rich girl. You have a family with her, but you don't love her. And then you realize that the church is against you, and because they're terrified of the fact that you could turn the people away from the church the way they want it to be, they send you into exile, and all that you owned is confiscated. So you have nothing, you never existed, so you are exiled. And during exile, you learn that the love of your life is now dead. So what do? You journey through literal hell, through purgatory, to be with the one person that makes you happy. And through history, people have thought that Romeo and Juliet is the greatest love story ever, but according to me, the Divine Comedy would have to be the greatest love story ever, because beneath all the hell tortures, beneath the purgatory, I think Dante's main message in Divine Comedy was the fact that he conquered all that just to be the one thing that makes him happy. And he may have encountered a lot of things that maybe he never put into the Divine Comedy, but from the little that we know, no matter how, we can't say if it was true, if it was false, to me I'd love to believe that this was true. Even though he wrote this book before he died, it took him literally 10 years, he dedicated 10 years of his life, and after he died is when Florence like uplifted his exile. So like, you're like, why? You could have done that when he was still alive. Maybe he could have spent a little more time with the kids, because he might not have loved his wife, but I'm pretty sure he loved his own children. And maybe it would have given him time to attend Beatrice's funeral, and maybe it could have given him a much more deserving life. But according to Dante, he was pleased with whatever he had, and through the Divine Comedy, he managed to tell the story of Florence, Italy. He managed to free the people of Florence, Italy through his words. That's why I told you he chose to write it in Italian instead of Latin, because not only the elite could read in Latin. So instead of doing that, he decided to write it in a more universal language that more people could understand, so that they could free themselves from the tortures and the pains of their rulers, from the oppression, from their own church, from the lies of their own ministers, and for them to see the light so that their future can be more bright. So I hope that you enjoyed this story. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Links to all my socials would be in the description down below or to the side, depending on whatever you're listening from. Remember to leave a comment, a review, whatever it might be, from Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and now we are on Podchaser. And like I said, I would also leave the next episode to be the audiobook to The Divine Comedy by Dante Alighieri, which you can freely download. And I acquired it from a very nice website where they read for you audiobooks, so I just downloaded it from there. Now I'm giving it to you. If you want the written one, I can send it to you, just DM me. And until next time, I hope you have an amazing November. You have an amazing week ahead and also amazing weeks ahead towards Thanksgiving. Until next time, my name is Kenzie Rock and this has been Care Alive. Goodbye.